Okay, good.
Okay.
This is going to be session 51. Can you believe we've done 51 of these?
Yeah, and, that's good.
We're
amazing.
Going to be talking. We're going to be talking about placement and what to do now when we get started, and we'll talk a little bit about the job boards and starting to kind of working backwards and how they can get their program started.
And I did talk to headquarters this morning, so I do have an update on the next RFP.
Debbie Weason.
Hi.
Hi.
Pardon me, I didn't get your name.
My name is Debbie Weason.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks for joining.
Sure.
You're Debbie. You're with the, this is Mike. This you're with the Veterans Training School, is it?
I am.
That's
hi, Mike.
Wonderful. Hey, it's always good to see someone with the veterans on. Have you got a program yet, or are you going to be submitting a grant proposal?
Well, that's what I'm learning about, whether we need the likelihood, because of our lack of experience, is going to be that we would be partnering with someone, but I needed to become so much more educated than the last round, so that's what I'm doing, is trying to become much more educated.
Good, good. Well, that's what we want to do. We're following all the programs from the beginning to the end of them, and what you need to do and when you need to do it. And on these calls, we have often some mentors of people who have been doing this for 10 years or so, and hopefully we'll give you some insights that you can move forward with. Did you submit a proposal in the last round, or did you partner?
We were going to, and at the last hour, this was something through Wentworth, they declined to, they decided not to submit. I think what was suggested at the time, after the fact, because it was not submitted, was perhaps to work with JYF Networks,
mm-hmm.
Paula Parrish, mm-hmm. and there's a group of people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Paula was on our call last week, and she's often on the calls. You were thinking of, oh, they suggested that perhaps you partner with them. Is that it?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I'm not sure if they are going to be, if where they are in their proposal. I think they have to resubmit this year, and it might be a really good opportunity. What happens is they're two-year grants. So once you apply, you that goes for 2 years, and then you can reapply. And I'm not sure where they are in their cycle. You might know better than we.
I don't right now, but I do. But I did happen to meet Paula this year, and we had talked about this because it was recommended. So mm-hmm. there's an open door for me to contact them and work with them.
Perfect. Are you in the Boston area? Or?
I am. I'm not too far. I'm probably blocks away from them, literally.
Oh, they have a wonderful facility. I've visited them a couple of times, and they, it's a great location, and nice people to work with, and they've been with the Brownfields program since about 3 years or 4 years after it started, and so they're very
well entrenched. That's what I had heard.
Very well entrenched. And,
Hi, did someone just join?
Yes, we're not arrived.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you for inviting me.
We were just talking about to Debbie about looking to submit. Do you have a program now, or are you thinking of starting a program?
Thinking about starting one. We don't. We do not have one.
Okay, excellent. These professional learning community calls are exactly about that. What we do is we every 2 weeks we discuss what's involved in setting up a program. And then we go into specifics of what perhaps you should be thinking about now and what you should be doing and how to set up your program, how to partner. And then.
Hi, did someone just join?
Yes, this is Liam from Wentworth.
Hi, Liam.
Very good. We've got two people from Boston today. Liam, we've got Debbie on the line. She's with the Veterans Training.
I'm listening in, Liam.
Oh, hi, Debbie. How are you?
Hi, Liam.
You know Liam.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
Someone just joined?
Yes.
Hi, it's Tim Bull with St. Louis Community College.
Hey, Tim.
Hi,
Tim. Tim is in St. Louis and is very familiar. Now we have a mentor, Tim, because we've got three people on the line that are thinking of submitting grants this winter. So your insights are going to be really valuable. One of the things that we were explaining to Debbie, and one of the things we like to do on these calls, for those people or communities that don't have a training program, we'd like to talk about all of the components that are necessary to have a sustainable program like Tim's. And for those more experienced people like Tim, we'd like to bring out issues. Perhaps Tim can walk away with an idea or two in addition to helping everyone else, which is a tremendous help, but he can also perhaps get a few tips or maybe get a little bit of an insight here or there that other people are, what they're doing. But we have these informal conversations about every 2 weeks, and we limit them to about a half hour. We do record them, and we do post-session notes that kind of summarize it. We have about 80 people that either might look at the notes or come on or off the call. So we like to do that. Why don't we get started with GLOW? Do you want to give us a rundown of both just a repeat of the toolbox and how they could access these calls, and also the current status of the RFP?
Sure. I talked to headquarters this morning, actually, and asked them, because they had originally told us that they thought that the next job training RFP would be released at the end of November. They told me that it is currently being reviewed by management at headquarters and other EPA officers, and now they're saying that they think that a more realistic release date is going to be early December. So it's already been backed up just a hair. And as soon as that comes out, they usually notify me immediately, and then I put that out on the listserv. So if you are part of this PLC, that means you are also part of our outreach listserv. So you will get notified that way. But it wouldn't be a bad idea just to also just keep monitoring EPA's website to see when that comes out. The Brownfields Toolbox, what Mike was just talking about, yes, we do post all of these recordings from these sessions and the notes on our website called the Brownfields Toolbox. And the URL for that is brownfields-toolbox.org. And once you get there, if you look along the top, there are some tabs. Go to the one that says PLC Corner, and then you'll see the session notes, the session recordings, all that stuff. So you just click on it, click on the notes that you want to listen to, or the recording you want to listen to, or the session notes you want to read, and pull it up on your screen. Very simple.
Great. Generally, once an RFP goes out, it's usually, Tim, is it about 3 months that you have to complete the application and submit it?
Two and a half to 3 months, roughly.
So if we go December, and unfortunately, EPA has no consideration of holidays and things, so they come out and they'll look at come out in December, which is over Christmas, and a lot of training institutions shut down. But they're going to say December, January, February. So we're talking about probably a February due date, because they like to get them. They take another 3 to 4 months to evaluate them. So March, April, May. So they want to try to get them approved by June or July. So that kind of defines it. So if they come out in December, I would say second week in December, they come out January, February to early March due date, and then April, May, June for evaluation, awarding in early July. And then we have our annual Brownfields Conference of the Grantees in August. So that's pretty much the timeline. And then, of course, if you get the grant, then you would be starting in the fall of 2012. Is that the way you did it, pretty much, Tim, when you received your grant?
we were awarded, and I kind of came in right after this occurred. We were awarded roughly September time frame, and we started our first classes in January of 2010.
So you were one cycle off. Yeah, usually was 2 to 3 cycles a year. So some people will have a fall cycle. Some will do it January so that your graduates are coming out in time for summer.
Right, and the biggest thing, the reason why we did ours is we didn't want to do something in the fourth quarter and then have people sit for 3, 4, 5 months before the weather breaks and work starts out. I mean, in Missouri, typically construction or this type of work doesn't really pick up until April, May time frame. So we structured ours so that the majority of our students were coming out at that time frame.
Right. And this is particularly true in the northern climates and in more of the southern climates and western. They might have 3 cycles. In northern climates, these occupations are closely related to construction trade, so your biggest demand is going to be in the spring when they're looking for remediation workers. So that if that's the type of population you're going after. So what we're going to do is, as soon as this RFP comes out, of course, we're going to be focusing very specifically on the ranking and the ranking criteria that they evaluate with. But before that time, we're going to go over all of the components of setting up a program that's a sustainable program what you should be doing now. Even though it sounds like a long time, December is, well, it's not such a long time anymore. There's a lot of things you may want to start talking about doing now, and actually this is a great time to start looking at your partnerships or reevaluating your partnerships, who you're going to be working with. If you don't have a fiscal agent, and of course, with all these calls, you don't necessarily have to be working with EPA money. You may decide to start one of these programs, and you might be able to find some local money or some regional money or foundation money to get the beginnings of a program started and then apply for money later. What's nice about the EPA grants is you get the $300,000 and it gets you going and it gives you a critical mass so you can start to go after other leverage funds. But there are people who might choose to get the program started and they might get some state money, which I know is difficult now, or foundation money, or link up with someone. Another approach is linking up with an organization that already exists but is not doing environmental training. And, when you're talking about certain populations groups, there may be people that have funding and they would like to do 2 things. One, they'd like to work with your population group that you've got, they would like to get into environmental education of some sort that they're not doing now. And if you could link up with one of those partners, you're way ahead of, you've taken this jump start. And depending on what kind of organization you are, really depends on who you link up with. If you you definitely want to have someone's going to have to be a fiscal agent, so if you are not familiar with government federal grants and you don't have a federal grant now or have not had one, it's a steep learning curve. So it makes a lot of sense to find someone who has gotten federal grants already.
Hey, Next Alliance, Brooklyn, New York.
Hey, how are you today?
How are you today? Very good.
Good. Now, you've also gotten some, are you currently under grant now?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. We've got 2 mentors, and we've got some people who are thinking of submitting a grant. Now, we were just talking about all of the requirements. When you were starting up, were you a fiscal agent? Did you have the capabilities to go for a grant all by yourself, or did you find you had to partner?
No, we went for it all by ourselves. We've been getting grants from EPA since 2002, I believe.
Right. And you've done an excellent. You defined your target group.
Yes.
And how did you go about in terms of this grant process? Did you Now, we talk about working backwards, of defining your target population, defining your community, and then defining the types of jobs you're going to go. Kind of a, it's counterintuitive, working backwards necessarily rather than working forwards. How did you go about doing that?
Well, we were the sub-grantee to, when we started, we were the sub-grantee to a group up in Boston. And they wanted to duplicate what they were doing up in Boston here in New York. And actually, we kind of went out. We wasn't going to do it, but what we did was we looked for the jobs first before we even accepted anything. And then we come to find out we had some environmental companies right in our backyard, and they was willing to work with us, and we started from there.
I'm sorry, is this Strive in New York?
No, this is St. Nick's in New York.
Oh, St. Nick's,
actually,
yeah.
We're in partnership with Strive, but Strive we kind of learned everything they knew about the environmental field from us because we were partners with them.
Right. I remember I have facilitated that conversation. Actually, this is Liam Trung. I used to work.
Hey, Liam, how are you? You was up in Boston, right?
Yes, a small
world. I remember you. I remember you came down for a time or two.
Right,
I'm Ron
yeah.
Lee.
Lim was one of our early grantees. He worked with JFY many years ago.
Yes, yes, because they gave the grant to Strive. Strive gave it to us.
Right, right, yes. Well, I'm glad to see the project is still going. So now your target population is still, and your community is still in the same, like you had.
We've broadened our reach. But the population is still the same.
Okay. Now, when you chose your population, what did you do? You zeroed in on a neighborhood or a group of people you would like to train. Is that how you went about this?
We zeroed in on people that were underemployed and underemployed or non-employed and needed to make a living wage.
Okay. Well, did they come from a specific neighborhood?
Well, when we first started, they came from North Brooklyn.
Okay.
Now we kind of about take them from all over.
Okay. So you basically did this. You had a group of people that you really wanted to work with. Then it sounded like you started going after the types of jobs that those people could be employed in. Would that be correct?
Right. Well, we talked with what we did was as we began to design the program. We talked to employers and find out what they were looking for and what we needed to do in order to have our people become more employable. And as a result, we ended up giving our graduates like somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 certifications at the end of the training, which meant that they were consistently working because some of the work in the environmental field is seasonal.
That's right.
So what happens is if an employer likes one of our graduates, they'll just move them from job to job to job, so they stay continuously employed instead of working by contract.
And so, Ron, what is your placement rate?
In this day and age, it's about 60%.
Okay.
I mean, back, before the economy hit, it was like 85 to 90%. But one of the things that we're finding out from the employees that we deal with is that most environmental companies or construction companies are not hiring directly. They're using staffing agencies. They don't want to bring people on and pay the FICA and pay the workman's comp and do all that stuff because the economy is not stable yet. So they're using staffing companies on a contractual basis to hire people. And as they get jobs, they move, from one to another. But the companies directly are not hiring.
So do you send your students then to the staffing agencies?
Yeah, they call us all the time.
Okay.
Now, Tim, did you do this in a similar fashion where you defined did you define a population or a community, or how did you go about it?
It's pretty much the same way. The underemployed and unemployed, we have a number of sites that need to be cleaned up. We have a Superfund site nearby, so we try to give preference to individuals who live in that particular area, and that's where we target a lot of our outreach to. But still, we also give preference to veterans, and we work with individuals who are felons.
Okay.
And
so
Tim, you're from where?
I'm from St. Louis.
Okay.
Tim is from St. Louis, had a great program, continues to have a great program. And some people will, and it's interesting because he's got a hybrid, some people will target disabled. We've had some target ex-offenders. We've had some do veterans. We've had some do women, all underemployed. The one thing is, and EPA wants to emphasize underserved, underemployed. Some do inner city, some do rural. So, and as Tim says, you've got a mix of ex-offenders. You've got they're all underemployed. You've got some veterans. So you've got a mix, and you've also got that neighborhood. So you define the type of people you're working with, and then the neighborhood. And then you go after the jobs. So what, in other words?
Well, it's kind of both, and I mean, the jobs are probably the most important aspect of things. So you reach out to the employers who do the work, and try to find out what types of people they're looking for, what types of skills they're looking for,
right.
And then you try to get to the outreach of individuals that are going to satisfy that, because you know ultimately it's a jobs training program. You got to get people employed and get them some work, because the worst thing to do is train them and let them sit, because then it's useless. So both are equally important. And then you just try to match them up with the employers. You know, like the gentleman said before, most of the employers aren't going to hire directly, especially right off the bat. So they do a lot of temporary staff and agency type work. So we reach out to the staff and agencies to find out what type of skills they're looking to see. Because not only are they locally, they're also, you know, regionally. So, you know, they send people elsewhere.
Yes, most of the work that our graduates do, it's not in New York City. It's a lot up in upstate New York or Pennsylvania, North Carolina. We've even been down to the Gulf. We've been to the Bahamas. I mean, Bermuda, not Bahamas. And we use the staff and agency as far away as North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. One of the common things you'll hear people who aren't familiar with this subject says, well, I'm going to use the WIB or Department of Labor, and there's nothing against WIB and Department of Labor, but they just don't work. They're just too general. Now, perhaps in some communities they do work. We do have grantees who are WIBs, but when you go on their national sites, their one-stops, it directs you to some very general construction categories, and it's hard to find to zero in on environmental firms. So has anyone had any success with Department of Labor placement services or anything like that?
No, we've used local WIBs and career centers more. You know, it's another source. It can't be the source, though.
Right.
Because they're more concerned with their local area and only their area.
Right. And that gets us into the point is, if you're starting a new program, you're going to have to do, and we're going to talk in another session about labor market assessment, but you're going to have to generate your own leads and determine who the people are who are employers, and really not necessarily count on the WIB to do that work for you. It sounds like you're going to have to, either they're going to have to come to you after they find out you're trying to start a program, or you're going to have to identify them and go to them. What's interesting in this call is there seems to be, at this point in time in the economy, a whole lot of emphasis on temp firms and manpower-type staffing firms.
That's across the board, not only just an environment. That's across the board.
Yeah, I agree, even at our college for any position. This is GLOW. Our college does the same thing.
And, Mike, back to the thing with the WIBs and the career centers, you know, we found that they're useful for referrals for candidates for the training program, but as far as the employment side of things, it's still best just to go out, because it's your program you got to sell, and you know the career centers or WIBs, they're selling multiple things.
And as a general question, this is Lim from Boston. What is the cost per participant for these programs in these days now that you that will cost you guys to train and place someone on a job?
Well, in New York, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $7,000 to $8,000. But we use the one-stops and the worker career centers to kind of subsidize that. because we use their grants, their individual training grants.
Okay. So you do use the ITA funding to subsidize other costs in addition to the EPA
funding. Yes, we do.
But the total cost per participant is about $7,000 to $8,000. Is that
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and,
but yeah, I mean, it's kind of high, but it's high. But maybe the rest of them are not. But we end up giving them 8 to 9 certs every class.
Right, and here in St. Louis, we're probably somewhere between $7,500 and $8,000. Mm-hmm. But again, like the gentleman said, a lot of it depends on the certifications and licenses that you offer. You know, and some other things that you know, are you paying for physicals? You know, and what's included in the physical.
Right.
You know, we use the career centers for some of the job readiness skills and life skills that, you know, the grant won't pay for.
And those are good numbers, actually. Those are excellent numbers. When you look at federal job training programs, that is way below what you read about in other programs.
And it's probably cheaper than if somebody were just off the streets to go to the local, because we partner with St. Louis University, who does all of our training. If somebody off the streets wanted to go to any of these classes, they could. They would have to pay the general, you know, the normal fee that any other student would pay, and it's more expensive than that.
Yes.
The other thing about it is your students coming out of these programs have several thousand dollars worth of certifications, 6 certifications at $300 to $500 a piece could be, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 for their employer that he's saving.
Sure. Now, does any of the state or city have kind of wage subsidized like in Boston here, we have there is the wage subsidized program. Not really. It's geared toward to internship. So if you place a student, a graduate, into a job through an internship for 3 months, and then they will subsidize that wage, and that would help the employer to that would be a way to incentivize the employers to hire your graduates too. Does any other city have similar programs?
In St. Louis, we have an OJT program that pays 50% of the wages, but the devil's in the details, at least with our, you know, here in our state, because they have to be employed full-time, they have to be a direct hire, and then they have to be employed for so much time after the OJT stops. So a lot of employers kind of shy away from that because they can't guarantee it.
We have in St. Nick's, and what we do is we don't give it to the staffing agencies, but we entice the permanent hires to use wage subsidies so we can get our people in the door.
Yeah, in California we do the same thing. We have the subsidies that is available for the employers, but just like the gentleman said before me, it's like the issue we have here is that kind of makes the contractor a little bit skitsy about that, because they don't necessarily want to hire that person, but they're willing to at least put them in an environment where they can get some hands-on training, but they're not necessarily wanting to be tied into the fact that they might have to then keep them employed for, you know, 60 or 90 days later.
But one of the things that are getting off this conversation is, at this point, we look at this whole general thing. We've identified the types of people we're going to target, the communities we're going to target. We're going to start talking to the employers about the types of jobs and training they're going to need. And then we also, and this is an early phase of developing our grant, we start sniffing around for sources of funding or leverage or subsidies to the extent that we can get ITA funding, what that involves, what kind of state programs. Some programs have brownfields employment programs. Some has full-time employment. So you have to start looking around at programs, and that might have subsidies. That may also influence your population, because if you're, for example, training veterans, you may be able to get veterans rehab military assistant funding. If they're disabled veterans, you may get money from disabled veterans funds. If you're using ex-offenders in your program, you may get Department of Justice money. You might get disabled state voc rehab money, or even some HHS money. So that may have some influence also on the target groups that you're going after. Has anyone been successful in getting VA money, for example, military assistance?
No.
Out there? Mm-hmm.
Not
there
for
is...
green jobs, but in general, yes. There's both
mm-hmm.
state and local. There's Mass Rehab and Evoke Rehab that will pay for training if people qualify.
Yeah. And
based on their disability.
And in these early stages of your developing your program before these grant RFPs come out, it's good time to start getting on that phone and finding out what programs are out there that you might qualify for. Is there money this year, for example? And this varies from time to time. They may or may not have money at this time. They may have money in 6 months. But establishing your links of communications, is there some, for example, is there some military assistance, some VA money out there? What does it take to get that money? Who does it apply to? Would it apply to a program that you started? And how would you have to structure your program to be able to qualify? So while these things are not, you're not going to basically pander to these programs. In other words, you're not going to basically make your program just to fit their money, but it may influence your overall design of your program. For example, if you're thinking of addressing disabled veterans, or veterans, for example, you may go into a Wounded Warriors program, which is very similar to a veterans program, but people who may be in more need, and also there would be leverage funding available from disabled veterans groups, and by approaching them and suggesting that you may want to even partner with them, but that you were thinking of this population group, they might say, we've been looking for someone to do this, and if you go into this and we can help you structure your program, we would definitely want to support your activity. So the time to find those things out is now rather than later, so that as we start thinking about structuring our grant proposals, we may look at that. And so often we'll have programs that get started, they've locked themselves into a structure, a target group, and a population and a community, only to find that if they went to this other direction, there may have been quite a bit of funding that they might have been able to leverage, and it might have been sustainable funding. So
yeah, this is Barbara Hernison from Southern California. I think what you're saying is right. I mean, if we can take a look at the diversity of the opportunities that are out there, but what we've experienced just recently in California, especially in Southern California, when we had the Clean Energy Workforce Training Program monies, we had a lot of the workforce and community colleges working on making sure that the training was accessible, which was really actually that worked. The problem is we didn't have a housing market to be able to place these people into jobs. And
right.
So it was train, high mm-hmm. numbers of people, and then at the end they had no jobs to go to. And that's our biggest concern when we're talking about what other programs are available to be able to supply the training to or the skills that they need to be able to get out there in the workforce, but there's no jobs to tie them to.
Right.
My name is
happened with brothers.
I'm sorry. My name is Lynetta Wright, and I was invited because I work closely with the Florida Brownsville Association,
mm-hmm.
and I'm on the I am the chairman of on the board of directors. We work with the and I'm a nonprofit organization, environmental group, and we work closely with a community college, and we have had we're on our fifth graduating class, and we have 400 applicants that are on a waiting list. And we are also challenged with the contractors, our companies that are not willing to hire these guys. We've had training with HAZMAT, with people with 800 hours of HAZMAT and OSHA training. But what I wanted to interject in the previous conversation is that what we have looked at is that we've found a partner in the HUD because of the situation that we are in, is that we're dealing with people that living in the communities with the contaminated site, and we found that HUD and the Department of Transportation has a good resource that can lend to that, because we're addressing housing, remediating the contaminant sites where people are living, and so we're using that as a source. So I just wanted to, you know, bring that, you know, component in into the conversation.
And that's excellent, because the communities want to use in situ, if you could use people who live in the communities to clean the communities, that's really what the program's all about, to the extent that you can achieve that. That's wonderful. Anyone
can
who
I
may
ask
be on
the last question? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? For those who are looking to prepare their application at this point, besides you know, evaluating your partnerships and target community population and so on, would that make sense to look at last year, because the RFP is not available? Do you think there would be much change if we look at last year criteria and trying to come up with some sort of budget planning?
You can, and in 2 weeks from now we'll address that. Actually, our 30 minutes is up, and we like to keep this short, but in 2 weeks from now will be our next call on the 23rd, and let's go into that. It will be similar, but it will be a little different, and we have some hints about that. So let's go that next time, and we'll continue a little bit more on this placement and partnering next time also. Anyone who's on this call that has not sent me their email, and most of you have, just go to msenew@aol.com to make sure that you get post-session notes and then the reminder of the call on the 23rd of November. And
Mike, after you get any updates to that, you want to send me that list, and then I will make sure that they get put on the outreach listserv.
Okay, we'll make sure that they're on all of these lists so that they're up to date. And in 2 weeks, what we'll do is we'll start looking at that RFP and start to focus in on that. But I think there's been a great discussion on where we really begin in terms of between our kind of our homework between now and the 23rd is to start looking at local resources as we discuss the local community we may want to address, the local populations we want to address, start getting feel for what might be out there in terms of veterans benefits, ex-offender benefits, VA, HUD, programs that may be, you know, weatherization was a big thing and that's kind of blown over. Is there a new thing that's out there now? Is it going to be something that's going to be a flash in the pan, or is it something more sustainable? So let's kind of go from there, and we'll talk to everyone in about 2 weeks. Is that okay?
Can I ask just
Thank
one
you.
Question
yes.
before you go, please?
Yes.
Is this RFP going to be a collaborative effort, or is this going to be something that we're going to work toward for each individual for funding in their in particular?
Basically, and you're new to the call, HMTRI is a we've worked with EPA for just since the beginning of the Brownfields program. And what our purpose is to help communities get programs started on their own. We don't have our own training program. We are associated with NSF training programs, and we've been involved in EPA training programs. We have a cooperative assistance program with EPA to basically do what we're doing today, help communities, provide some assistance to the extent that we can talk about getting a program started. In the end, each community needs to develop their own local program if they're interested and submit those grants to EPA, or not choose not to go with EPA assistance and perhaps start their own program with local money or local foundation money. We're basically, these professional learning community calls are basically informational sessions, not affiliated with EPA. They're basically collaborations of people who have grants already from EPA or have their own programs going. So our objective in these 10 calls that we do every 2 weeks is pretty much kind of a general advice and consultation and group learning process.
Great.
Does that make
Thank
sense?
Thank you so much. It makes
mm-hmm.
sense.
And they're free, and you're welcome to join us whenever you can. We'll send out reminders. If I don't have your email, send it to msenew@aol.com, and we'll just make sure you're on all the lists. And if it turns out that it's something that you don't want to learn any more about or not interested in, you can just say remove, and we'll do that too. But we're certainly welcome to have the input of everyone on the line.
Great. I'm very interested, and thank you so very much.
Great. Well, we hope you'll decide to do a program, and you'll submit this Dynamite grant, and we'll have a program in your community, hopefully. So,
thank you.
Okay. Well, you all have a good day, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Same to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.